I will start the show. Tony Gwynn Jr. up in Seattle. I don't think he has his headphones on yet.
Oh, somebody better tell him.
I know. We're trying to tell him. It's one of those things.
I'm trying to get my new computer rolling here.
Yeah, we're a mess right now. Tony still doesn't have his head. I don't know what's going on.
Tony doesn't have his headset on. Chris doesn't have his camera going.
I have no idea where my phone is.
Welcome to the Scraby Chronicles, everybody, for the next 4 hours. It'll be Matt Scraby with Tony Gwynn Jr. looking on and watching. He looks quite perplexed.
He does.
Why can't anybody see me? It's not a big deal.
I have to put you on.
I'm right
Hold
here.
On. This is just
great.
Hey,
here I am. Okay, we're underway. We're we got it
together.
I don't
even have my phone. I got to go find that.
Yeah. Well, Tony will join us when he figures it out. Welcome to the show, everybody. Tuesday, and Padres coming off a rarity, I would say,
last night.
There's Tony. Tony, are you here with us?
Tony,
can you hear
Tony,
us?
Tony, can you hear me?
No, he doesn't look like he can hear us. I feel...
Uh-oh.
Do you think there's a disconnect somewhere?
I don't know. I got to go get my phone, so you're going to have to talk for a second.
Well, we know that Tony Gwynn Jr. is in his hotel room in Seattle. His bed is made very nicely behind him. And we could pretty much make fun of anything we want to right now because he can't hear us. But the show is underway in the wake of a 9-6 win for the Mariners last night over the Padres in the first game of this three-game series. So the Seattle Mariners can celebrate the 2025 Vetter Cup. Oh, good for them. Maybe they'll then give us the last two games since they've already won the Vetter Cup. Not a good night for David Morgan and the middle relief of the Padres. J.P. Sears had a 4-1 lead, could not hang on to that. And this doesn't happen very often. The Padres scored 6 runs and got beat. The Padres hit 4 home runs in the game. And this is the first time they've lost a game in which they've hit 4 home runs since 2021. So this happened last time 5 years ago. Personally, I'll take the Padres hitting 4 home runs every game the rest of the way and just assume that they're going to win most of those games. But they did not last night. It was a historic evening for Cal Raleigh. The big dumper, as he's known, hit his 50th home run of the year. And he is the first catcher ever to do so. And that was one of, what was it? 6-7 home runs last night. Polanco. Who's Jorge Polanco?
I knew who Jorge Polanco was.
I don't mind losing to the Mariners, but, you know, I expect to lose to Cal Raleigh and, you know, Eugenio Suarez and Josh Naylor and Julio Rodriguez and
it was
J.P.
a little bit
Crawford and Randy Arozarena. I don't expect Jorge Polanco to go 3-for-4 with 8 RBIs or whatever it seemed like he had last night.
Jorge Polanco is a sneaky good player, Chris.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure he is.
He is. I
sneaky
followed
good?
Him.
What do you mean you followed him?
He's hitting fancy baseball.
He's hitting .252 this year. He's okay. I mean, he's not.
Tony's smiling, which means he may be able to hear us at this point.
I hope so. But Jorge Polanco's not going to anybody's Hall of Fame. But he looked like it last night. 3-for-4, 4 RBIs, a home run. And ultimately, it was a Seattle victory. 9-6.
I had the wrong mic thing on. Sorry.
There we go.
Hey, Tony Gwynn Jr.
It was quite funny when we joined the show because you were looking into the screen like...
I hate to say it, Tony. You did look quite perplexed.
the unit wouldn't turn on. So I was like...
You're like, what is happening
I was
here?
Trying not to panic because I know if I panic, then that guy next to you, Chris... Which certainly going to
it
the
is,
panic mode.
It is an understandable moment, man. When you're in a hotel room and you're pushing the buttons you think you're supposed to be pushing, and you're not hearing what you think you're supposed to be hearing, it's definitely troublesome, I can tell you firsthand. So I totally get it. But I was just saying, Tony, I would think you'd agree that if the Padres hit 4 home runs in every game the rest of the season and score 6 runs the rest of the games, you know, the way they're going to win most of them. Last night was kind of a one-off in that regard. Don't usually see the Padres get this kind of offense and still lose.
You don't even need to go that far. You could just say if the Padres score 4 runs, they are likely going to win the game, except weird game like yesterday. It was like, you know, having been here the last couple of years and it being, you know, no offense, a kind of a snooze fest in terms of the offense because we very rarely score runs here. It was like nice, like, oh, okay, this is we hitting some homers today. We're going to do this. But then on the flip side, we didn't get, you know, a great start from J.P. Sears. I think David Morgan was given an opportunity to, you know,
stretch it out a little bit. It was interesting the way they used
not
him.
Even just stretch it out, but he was pitching in a high leverage spot. I know it was the fifth, but J.P. Sears had kind of run out of gas there. Because of the series the Padres had just played in, they had used their high leverage guys in all three of those games. He had a chance to kind of, you know, cut his teeth a little bit, if you will, in some big spots.
Yeah.
It didn't go well for him. And
I thought he got, you know, first he missed some pitches. The breaking ball that hit Raleigh in the foot kind of set him back. He lost his balance a little bit on that comebacker. I think it was Rodriguez hit it. It ended up bouncing off his glove, and Xander got the force at second. But that kept the inning alive. I think if Morgan doesn't lose his balance, he probably gets that ground ball, maybe starts a double play. The inning is over. And then it unraveled on him, right? A walk and a, you know, hit here by Naylor. And then the aforementioned Polanco pulls one down the line. And then I thought the biggest one of all, honestly, was the last one. The fly ball that lands, and, you know, Fernando, probably the only right fielder in baseball who even gets that close to it, but he couldn't quite haul that in on the slide. And to me, 7-4 to 9-4 kind of turned the lights out last night. So,
Tony, where are you at with that one with Laureano and Tatis last night? Because it looked like Laureano maybe had like a good look at it, but Fernando was coming flying, so he got out of the way. What was your read?
I thought Tati was the one that had the best shot at it. I didn't think, you know, given where they started at, not necessarily where we kind of pick them up, but where they started from, they were playing pretty deep. And so I thought Tati, he got his glove there. He just wasn't able to make the play. And, you know, like Chris said, you go from 7-4 to 9-4. It's mentally, that's a bigger hurdle. And you need more things to go right for you. When the deficit gets that big, and Seattle's a good team, ultimately. You know, that bullpen, pretty strong when you start handing it to Brash and you start handing it to Munoz there at the end. Those guys are tough.
And the Padres put some pressure on Brash for sure. They got the bases loaded.
Sheets almost clicked him.
Yes, Sheets just missed a three-run homer that would have made it 9-8. Then he ended up walking, and that set it up for Laureano to try and tie the game, and bases loaded. I mean, you're asking for a grand slam there, but hey, you know, you might as well ask. And I tell you, Brash was throwing that slider, Tony, that breaking like 4 feet out of the strike zone, almost impossible to lay off of. And then you're down two strikes, you're looking for that pitch, you have to be protecting, and he throws that fastball right at the bottom of the knees. It was really a good pitch. I don't blame Laureano at all for being frozen on that.
Nah.
Just a tough, tough guy to try to get a hit off there. And so, you look, they got the win, and that's one. But the Padres have done this all right, you know, a few times this year. Lose the first game, come back, get the last two, everybody will be fine, you know.
I think so. I think that was their best matchup. Now, you know, Padres will have Cease and Darvish going here, games 2 and 3. What version of Cease will you get today? Can the offense, if the offense can keep putting up runs like that, I'm really not worried at all.
No.
Now, granted, they're going to be going up against some real tough ones here these next couple of days. Castilla today, I think Wu tomorrow. Wu's an all-star. We know what Castilla is capable of. So, I mean, I don't anticipate there being some high-scoring runs, some high-scoring games these next two, but certainly last night was encouraging and a place that the Padres just haven't swung the bats well in. They got loose last night.
We've already probably gone farther than anybody wants us to without mentioning Fernando getting back in the home run column last night. Dead central, you know, doing what he, you know, we've become used to seeing him do, Tony. He got ahead in the count, 2-0. He sat, you know, probably sat dead red. They tried to get a fastball right down the middle past him. And yeah, frankly, that's a pitch he should, you know, hit 400 feet. And I was glad to see him do it. I hope that it signals a little bit more power from him. I know that the on-base thing has been working for the Padres. I know his defense has been beyond spectacular, but I still think a home run threat Fernando is, you know, just a little more dangerous to the rest of the teams out there. And I imagine he felt a whole lot better about it, whether or not it matters to everyone else or not. You go that long without a home run, you got to start bugging you a little bit if you're Fernando, right?
Yeah, when everybody keeps talking about it, like you and
like me.
And everybody else.
Yeah,
everybody
that's
else.
Right. We're terrible.
I mean, to me, you know, with that, with the home run, Toddy, then I hope you guys are all ready to embrace the not getting on base as much, a little more punch outs as well to go along with it. That's a part of being the power version of that. You can't. There are very few in this game that can do both.
I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about, Tony. I have never ever been a guy that wanted my cake and to eat it too. Come on. Do you really think I'm being unreasonable? I'm asking for Fernando to have a 900 on base and a 900 slugging. Come on. I think that's only right.
I think I was happy that he got it because I'm sure it's weighing on him too. He's hearing all the conversation. Whether, you know, he was going to admit that or not, I'm sure he's getting wind of it at the very least. And so, yeah, and to see him go dead central was especially nice because that's in this ballpark, that's like one of the toughest spots to go to, and he made it look really easy.
Yeah, here I was thinking that Seattle, you can't ever hit the ball out of the ballpark. There were five
ball
home runs.
Jumping.
There were five home runs in a span of 14 batters last night. I mean, it was home run derby there for a minute.
It was also nice and warm here yesterday. I don't know if I've ever been here this late and it feels this warm. Usually it's kind of chilly by this time of year.
It's supposed to be warm again tonight. I looked at the weather.
So, who knows? That means maybe more home runs.
I would hope so for the Padres.
Like Tony said, just give me six runs every night and I'll take my chances. They're going to win
for sure
almost all the time. They're just not last night. So,
except for last night.
Anyway. Yeah.
All right, let's get to break. First break of the day. When we return, more Gwen and Chris on the other side.
The 20.
Talk a little bit.
Sorry, I don't know why I just started talking. No, go ahead, Tony.
Great.
No.
I don't know why
I started talking.
It seems very important what you have to say there,
no,
buddy.
Go ahead.
The 20, what? 26 schedule? Is that what you're going to say?
Yes, I'm sorry. This is the me problem.
Scrabe wants to let you guys know that the 2026 schedule came out. We're going to talk about it. More Gwen and Chris on the other side.
Wait, what schedule? All right, after a very smooth opening to the show, we try it again with segment number two. Crisello, Tony Gwynn Jr. in Seattle, of course, getting ready for tonight's ball game. He and the Padres will be heading over to the ballpark here in a little bit. Matt Scraby's alongside here in the Odyssey Palace Studios. Game one went to Seattle, as you know, 9-6 last night. We should mention the Dodgers did win, so L.A. gets the one-game lead for the moment. In the NL West, they also get Kike Hernandez back from the injured list. Blake Snell is on the paternity list right now, but he's due to be back for his scheduled start on Friday. Congratulations to Blake, family now with two babies. Child number two for Blake Snell this week. Dodgers are still without Max Muncy and Tommy Edman, also Hyesung Kim. Although Muncy could be back next week. Padres are hoping to get Jackson Merrill back this weekend. And there's some talk that Michael King, who's due to come off the injured list today, is it not? The 26th, I think, was his day. Maybe tomorrow. Who knows? Maybe Michael King will be back soon. I'm sure we'll find out about
all
of that later.
Kevin Acey, if you would have read my notes, that Kevin Acey said it's not likely this weekend.
Said he could be coming back soon.
Michael King.
Gotcha.
They want it to have a rehab start or a simulated game before he comes back.
I will say this. The Padres starting staff seems to lead the world in sim games this year. Maybe it's just because we hear about all of them, but lots of sims.
That's exactly why.
Yes. Scraby referred to before we... As we were trying desperately to go to commercial to end the first segment, Scraby interrupted us with news that the 2026 schedule is out. I, you know, for those of you that are making plans for March of 2026, the Detroit Tigers will be the Tigers. Tigers will be the home opener here at Petco Park on Thursday, March 26th.
Tarek
Skubal. Circle it on your calendar. Good point. Could be Skubal. Mm-hmm. Giants will come in second. I mean, do you want me to just read the whole schedule?
No. I can give you some highlights if you want the highlights.
The stretch right before the break is tough. I think we like have Dodgers, Diamondbacks,
Blue Jays.
Blue Jays are in there.
I'm looking to see if we play the Dodgers at the end of the season next year.
You do.
There is one series in LA.
They're spread out. We got one in, I think it's one in May, one in July, maybe one in
late June as well.
June, and then we get one in September. One matchup in September.
Right. The final.
So they spread it out.
The last week of the regular season, the Padres will play three games in LA against the Dodgers. Next year, they'll finish at home with Arizona. All right, so that's next year, though. That's
Yankees coming to town in September. That's kind of cool.
I'm trying to put the schedule away, but all right, yes. Pirates come in August, so if you're wondering.
I think the Yankees coming to San Diego in September, you know, it's kind of cool because they're going to be battling for a playoff spot. So whatever, Chris, just throw away your schedule. That's fine.
Well, I don't really need it for another 9 months.
I'm already planning a trip.
We got other things to take care of this season.
Yeah, I'm a little worried about this year's schedule right now.
All right.
I have a question for the two of you. Glad I have you here. And for those listening out there, you can throw your two cents in. You know how these kinds of things happen to us, not always on the show, but while we're off doing things. So we bring them to our attention to try to get feedback. Today, we were doing our regular Tuesday golf game. The group ahead of us was...
You've been having a lot of problems with the groups ahead of you, man.
Yeah,
I'm just saying. This is the second story. The groups ahead of you been doing some ridiculousness.
This is just a little different, I think. The group ahead of us was a bunch of... Now, I'm playing at Admiral Baker, which is often a lot of military, right? Plays there, Scrabe?
Yep,
you know,
definitely.
Kids that are in the military or, you know, younger folks. So we appreciate them all the time. But the kids playing in front of us were just a little too goofy for my liking. And they were really dragging their feet. And they would get up on the tee box, and we'd be finishing the hole before, looking across, and they're just having a conversation. And they're not driving the ball, and they're not doing anything. And they were staying just enough ahead of us. To where we could continue playing, but we had to wait, and they seemed really rude and uncooperative. But we never met them.
Huh?
We never talked to them.
So how are they rude and uncooperative?
That's my question. Here's the question. What do you do? And here, look, we've all done this or come across this. When you're in your car, somebody cuts you off. You can't stand that person, even though you've never met them. You've never talked to them. You don't know anything about them. It felt the same today. I felt like these four kids are guys, young men, who are playing ahead of us. I couldn't stand them, even though I've never met them or spoken to them, nor ever will in my entire life. Is that wrong of me to be that way? Anyone? Nobody.
Scrape, you want me to go first?
Yeah, if you want to go first, because you know what my answer is.
No, I don't know what your answer is.
Okay, Tony will go.
Well, you know what, Scrape? You go first, since we don't know what your answer is.
Is it wrong to feel this way?
I mean, to just totally dislike somebody you've never met before.
No, because in golf, you could see how they're acting. You could see if they're kind of serious people, if they're not serious at all, and they're just having a conversation on every single tee, and they're not teeing off with the green open. That would be very... I would be pretty angry by that.
Enough reason for me to dislike them, then.
But I would say something. I'd be like, hey, guys, is there any way you could go a little bit faster? We're falling behind.
You would.
Yeah. You've seen me do this.
Yeah, I figured you would, but... I don't think you would.
You've seen me do it.
Man. I'm going to tell you one more thing about these four guys. They're a lot younger than we were, and I think every one of them had just come from the weight room.
You know what? If they're going to beat me up because I'm asking them to go faster, then please beat me up so I can... I don't get that
They looked like Hulk and three Hulk Juniors. Yeah. But they were blabbing a lot.
I would say that this might be one of those times where you guys were on the get off my lawn type deal today. And I only say that because everybody that shows up to the golf course can't be like in PGA mode where they're like, gotta make this next shot. Like sometimes you go there just to kind of like, and sometimes you go there just for the simple, like, you know, the camaraderie of it, right? So yeah. You're not really, and there is a certain etiquette. Now I get it. The last group you had on there, they seemed like they had no etiquette at all. This group, the way you explain it, it seems like they're just out having a good time. Maybe the conversation went a little longer, but you just might have been wanting to get in and get out of there today.
I think that, you know, the more I'm honestly thinking about this, because I brought it up to my the guys I was playing with, and I said, am I bad? Because I really dislike these guys. And one of the guys who played with Scott said, well, what have they done? I mean, I barely had to wait. And I said, I don't know what they've done. I just don't like watching them. They just are annoying to me.
That changes a little bit. I thought you were, like, waiting on every single hole for, like, minutes.
No, we were waiting here and there. And, you know.
Let me ask you this. How many times did the group in front of them get, like, one spot ahead? Like, they were on the tee.
No, they had nobody in front of them. They had all day in front of them.
That's when you guys could say, hey, can we play through? Nicer way of saying you guys are being slow. Need to get through.
No, we never got that close. They stayed enough ahead of us, but they were
okay.
Just...
I take it back. You can't be mad at these people.
they just sound like they were having a good old time.
The reason I'm bringing it up to you guys now is because the more I was thinking about it after I was done playing, the young guys in front of us were not the bad guys. I was the bad guys. Because I was the one that was upset.
Sounds a little bit like it.
I think so.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm coming to.
I appreciate you, Chris, because the wherewithal to bring it up. Because you didn't bring this one up the same way you brought up last week's or a couple weeks ago incident. Yeah. Like, I knew from the moment you started last time, it was like, oh, these guys seem like jerks.
Yeah.
This one seemed a little bit more of a you thing on this one.
Yeah, I think when Scott told me that, when he looked at me and he said, what have they done? And then I started trying to talk myself into the fact that I really didn't like them.
They kicked my dog. That's what they did.
I thought it was more of a me problem than it was a they problem at this point.
I think we've all been there at some point, though, in different situations where you wanted to hate on somebody, but the more it was pointed out to you, like, you really didn't have a good reason to be hating on them.
Yeah, there's an old George Carlin phrase, and I know I refer to George. Don't go. Oh, here we go. Because I use them judiciously.
I'm surprised you didn't play it.
And I use them only when I feel like they make some sense. But George Carlin used to say, "Did you ever think about that? People are the amount of a, for lack, I can't use his word.
Okay."
People are the amount of a terrible person.
Okay.
That is a direct correlation to how far away from they are from you when you discover this flaw.
It's too smart for me, man.
All right. Well, it's when somebody's way over there,
I don't even know what words we're using at this point.
Okay. When I'm in my car and you're in your car and you cut me off,
yes.
You are really a
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. When you're over there and I'm over here, you're kind of a that guy over there is kind of a
Oh, I do this all the time.
And if they're right next to you in line and they cut you off,
the closer you get.
Right. You whisper to that guy's kind of that's kind of how I felt today.
It's kind of like the dog meme where the gate is in between them and they pull it back and they're barking like crazy, like they want to kill each other, and then they pull the gate back and it's just kind of
and
like
they're just licking each other.
Little
sniffing.
Right.
Yeah. That's a great, yeah. I can see if you put it in those terms, Tony, dogs,
yeah, I figured you'd get it at that point, buddy.
The other stuff was like a thesis that I don't even want to think about.
Did we mention that the Braves come to town in June next year?
we hadn't yet. Jerks and Profar's return.
That, just want to clear that up.
That series actually precedes the Dodgers coming to town right after. So there's
that. I will tell you one thing about the schedule that I did notice that I'm sure Dodger fans will refer to at some point. The first two times next year that the Padres play the Dodgers, both series are here.
Say it one more time?
Yes.
The first two Dodgers series are in San Diego, and so is the second one.
Oh, I heard it wrong. I'm sorry. I wasn't confused. I heard it wrong.
Confused.
May, June, July, September.
Right. May and June in San Diego, July and September in Los Angeles next year.
Well, I don't like that because then you don't get a home series in the second half of the season.
Sorry about that. Scrape, more Gwen and Chris on the way.
That's it, I guess.
Hi, Gwen and Chris. 2:37 is the time. Chris Ello here. Matt Scraby right there. We're in the Odyssey Palace Studios. Tony Gwynn Jr. has to head down the stairs in the plush five-star hotel that I'm sure he and the rest of the Padres are staying in.
Yeah.
And get on the bus and get on over to T-Mobile Park. Tony will be with us a little bit later. We have a fantabulous sports game show for he and Scraby to participate in. And we also have a big five. All of that to come a little bit later in the program. Coming up here shortly, our good friend Mark Ziegler to catch us up on not only the goings-on with the Aztec basketball team. It's never too early to start talking about the hoop season, even though the football season is first. I kind of think we're a hoop school at this point, Scrabe, until Sean Lewis and company kind of come back up to snuff.
They got
to
do something.
Right. I'll welcome them with open arms, you know, when they get back to the competitive world. But for now, basketball is kind of king on the Mesa. Mark Ziegler on that. And also SDFC getting their first playoff berth in their first season, becoming the first team in the league to clinch a playoff berth and doing it with six fixtures remaining. Or six matches scheduled.
Oh, yeah, I was thinking about this. I can't wait to say that the Padres are confirmed.
The Padres hoping they can get confirmed to the postseason. But last night, they got confirmed back into second place, a game behind the Los Angeles Dodgers. I did have something before Ziegler bringing him on, but I've completely, totally, and utterly forgotten what that was. So, with that in mind, we'll bring Mr. Ziegler on here from the San Diego Union-Tribune. Hello, Mark. How are you today, sir? Good to have you with us, as always.
I'm doing great. I just spent the morning with my teaching pro at Riverwalk, Jason Petery, giving me some great tips. Can't recommend him highly enough. Sorting out my swing, which needs sorting out. So I'm in a good mood.
I've seen your swing. It does not need any sorting out.
Needs sorting out.
If there is a swing that needs help, it would be the one that I was displaying today out at Admiral Baker. So
See Jason. He'll sort you out.
Go see Jason. Thank you, Mark Ziegler. Let's start with the Chrome. I don't know if Scraby and I kind of discovered this nickname, the Chrome. I don't know how prevalent it is for SDFC. But to accomplish this first season, I understand soccer is a little different than some of the rest of the sports, the way you set it up, but they couldn't have asked for more success than they've had, right? I mean, first team playoffs, the crowds have been great. They've had kind of the most fun team in the league. They score a bunch of goals. Mike, this is everything we could have hoped for, right?
Well, I mean, when you look at MLS, like you said, and I did a story about this earlier this season, it's set up to help expansion teams. And the reason is because they need expansion dollars. This is really one of their major primary sources of revenue because they don't have the TV dollars yet, or maybe ever. And so they rely on gate and they rely on expansion, and expansion pays, you know, a big chunk. And so to get these owners to fork over, in this case, you know, a reported $500 million to have an expansion team, you better give them a path to be good pretty quickly. You know, if you look at the Padres' history, look how long it took them just to get to be 500. I think it took them 10 years. And in NFL and in the NBA, I mean, expansion teams are horrible for 10, 15, 20 years. And sometimes, in the case of the Padres, never even win a championship. And it's just very hard. And so MLS has set it up in ways, and with the salary cap, and some of the draft picks and some of the things they do to really help expansion teams. But that said, what they've done is over and beyond. I mean, they're the, like you said, first team in the league to clinch spot in the playoffs. Earliest an expansion team's ever done it. They're going to break the points record in a season for an expansion team. They're going to break the wins record. Anders Dreyer already has the record for most goal contributions by an individual on an expansion team with 30. The old record is 27. He's still got six games to go. He's an MVP candidate. The coach is Coach of the Year candidate. Tyler Heaps is Executive of the Year candidate. And so you just go down on and on down the list. Luca Bambino, probably a Rookie of the Year candidate. So, I mean, everything has gone perfectly for them.
I wanted to ask about one thing that I've completely forgotten about, and I'm very glad I've completely forgotten about it. Does everybody remember the controversy at the very beginning of the season, the chanting that was going on that was not, you know, appropriate to some of the other players? I kind of even forgot what it was all about now, but there was some chanting, some people up in the stands, and the, you know, SDFC, I thought, handled it perfectly. And then there were some reports of some fights after games and, you know, a few little things here that I don't know if it threatened to derail anything, Mark, but it's the kind of thing that could have gotten a little out of hand if not, you know, handled properly. Pretty obvious SDFC even handled that with a 100% success.
Well, they have a CEO in Tom Penn who actually came from a basketball background. Well, actually a swimmer in college and then a basketball background, and then he got into soccer, and he was president of LAFC. So he's already been through the whole expansion deal with MLS, started a team from scratch. They built a stadium for that team, filled it, built it into really the most successful team in the league over the last 5 years, probably. And then he moved down and did it again here. So he's been down this road before, had some of the same issues, some of the same demographics in Los Angeles as you would have here, some of the same issues with the P-word chant, you know, fighting. And so he's had a little bit of a blueprint, but he's also a really good CEO and understands how to handle these things, put these fires out, and they did it pretty quickly. So far, they haven't had any issues. Now, they're going up to play LAFC this weekend. We'll see how that goes. Because
that
obviously
the
some
one,
of their fans are going to travel.
Yeah.
But they've, you know, the one thing that you know, people should keep an eye on as we get towards the end of the season, and we talk about them having a great, great season so far, is they don't have a reserve team, and they just started their youth academy with 12 and 13-year-olds. And so they don't have depth. And in MLS, it's a long season, 34-game season. It stretches on. You've got all these other events going on during the season. It gets hot because you're playing in the summer. Players get worn out. There's also national team commitments in the middle of the season this year with the Gold Cup. And so they're starting to run thin. I mean, they've got 9 guys who are injured by my count. Even some of the players who are healthy and not on the injured list are really starting to wear down a little bit just from a long summer. And, you know, they go out and make some trades, replace them. And a guy like Corey Baird, they got from FC Cincinnati, comes in, he's playing really well, and then he pulls a groin. And so we'll see. They've got a tough, tough schedule. Last 6 games are really hard, and we'll see how they end up. But that's the hard part of being an expansion team. When you get to this point of the season, and as much success as they've had in the regular season the last few years, expansion teams have struggled in the playoffs in their first experience in the MLS playoffs. So that's something they're going to have to overcome as well.
Talking to Mark Ziegler, San Diego Union Tribune here on 97.3 The Fan. I'm going to switch gears a little bit, and that's Miles Byrd came out and you wrote a great article about him being open now that he has diabetes, and Mason Miller was traded for, and now he's in town and he's going to be in town the next couple of years. Do you know if Miles Byrd has any sort of, I guess, does he want to team up with Mason Miller? Is there anything they could do there? Because I know that a lot of people are very excited that there are bigger name athletes in San Diego now that are, you know, saying what they need to hear.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they have connected yet. I think they will, because I know the basketball team and the Padres have a pretty close relationship. I mean, Dutch is out there and Fitch is out there going to games, you know, every few weeks. And they honored them, you know, when they went to the championship game a few years ago. So I suspect they probably will. You know, part of the thing with Miles Byrd, it wasn't just, okay, I want my teammates to know. I want the immediate, you know, community around the team to know, staff, etc. He wants the public to know, and he wants kids to know, And I think anything he can do to get it out there, because he talks about, look, the mistake he made was being quiet about it. And he wishes he hadn't been. And there's so many resources out there for people with diabetes, particularly type 1 diabetes like he has, which is much more serious and much more involved in terms of how you control it. And I think he wants the word to get out. And, you know, we talked. He was great when I interviewed him. He just kept talking about it. It was like a weight off his shoulders, I think. And then after the story ran, I mean, I got so many emails from people. And I saw him the next day, and he goes, I can't tell you, Mark, I had, you know, 10, 15 people just come up. He was at a Swiss League game, just come up to me and said, thank you for doing that. It helps me. I've had to deal with it. Or someone in my family has, or I know a friend's kid who just got diagnosed. And I just think he felt so much pride. So I suspect they will probably team up and do whatever they can. He's open about it. He's out about it. And he has a type of personality that can connect with people.
Yeah, good for Miles Byrd, and good on you for doing that, you know, Mark. And you know, another guy with the Aztec ties that has type 1 diabetes is J.J. Spahn, who won the U.S. Open. So,
I believe Michael King does something with diabetes
Michael
as well.
King's wife, I believe. Yeah, okay. So a lot of people are coming out, and it is helping a lot in our community. You wrote about the young newcomer, Mark, to the Aztecs last week. And, you know, his father passed, and you do such an amazing job. I can't impress upon people, having covered teams myself, it's not always easy to get the kind of relationships you need to have with these guys, though. So that somebody like Elzy Harrington will talk about his father passing and what it means to him and what he's, you know, devoting this season to. Talk a little bit about that. I mean, these are real kids, and you bring them to life a lot of times, Mark, and I think we owe you on that. It's part of the reason that we really love this team. Once the season starts, we feel like we know all these kids.
Well, I appreciate that, and hey, look, I got to give props to Dutch and his staff for being as accessible as they are. I'm telling you, most college teams, almost all college teams at this level are not, and coaches are paranoid. Usually they're younger coaches. Dutch is old enough to understand how it works and how to have a relationship, positive relationship with the media. And then also Richard Stern, who is their media relations director for the team. I mean, incredible job in connecting me with kids and sitting with them, prepping them for interviews. Like, okay, he's probably going to ask about this and this.
Right.
And so when I get them, they're just not raw. I mean, that really, really helps. But Elzy, I'm telling you, I've covered a lot of freshmen over the years. He is the most mature freshman I've ever been around. And I think when you go through something like losing your dad at that age, it forces you to grow up really quickly. And he has incredible parents. I mean, both are doctors. They've done an incredible job raising him. But I think also the experience has also sort of pushed him to new levels of maturity and being able to talk about this. I can't even imagine what it's like to talk about that at his age. But he is really, really talented as well, beyond just being mature. It's going to be really interesting to me to see on a team that's already with talented players how he fits in. He's definitely good enough to play. I mean, I've seen enough of even a small sample size this summer, but I've seen enough to see what he can bring when he embraces the defense and his length, his versatility, and it's just his kind of spirit and wanting to win. And I mean, he's had some drills where he's like, I don't want to say embarrassed some veterans, but he's more than held his own. We'll put it that way. And there's been moments we've looked like a freshman too, but what's great is he's not going to have a starring role on this team, and he'll be able to bring him along sort of slowly, but it'll be interesting to see how they deploy him. Is he going to be an off guard? Is he going to be a point? I think he eventually will be a 6'6 point guard. And so I just can't wait to see what he does, but beyond all that, he's just great to talk to. And I think, you know, if he stays, and we always have to say that now, right, about
right.
a kid, if he stays. But if he stays 2, 3, 4 years, I'm not sure he'll make it that long, but he'll be a leader on this team. He'll be one of the leaders on this in the program.
Magoon Gwath is back after the freshman year. I mean, we couldn't be happier about that. Taj DeGorville, another from the last year's freshman class who's returned. The third is Pharaoh Compton, and we saw a few, you know, flashes last year. I mean, I don't know that people even remember. He was the preseason freshman of the year. It didn't necessarily go his way, except for some really loud slam dunks along the way, Mark. How much more does he have to give to this program this year? What are we seeing from him at this point?
he's the guy I've been most impressed with in the summer workouts I've watched in terms of just the raising his level of consistency. Like you said, we saw some flashes, but he's starting to turn a corner. He turned a corner with his body 100%. His body is completely transformed from what it was last year, and that allows him to use his work rate. He always had a high motor, but his body wasn't allowing him to keep that high motor. Now he can keep it going longer, but he's just been a dominant force some days and developed parts of his game. I'm not sure we'll see it this year or not, but he's definitely developed more of a shot. He's made some. I mean, if you watch any of the Swish League games, and again, that Swish League, it's different than college, but he's made, I mean, I've seen games where he's made two or three threes. And he's not afraid to take them. So we'll see how that goes in the season if he's in that position to shoot them. But just his activity around the basket, blocking shots, grabbing rebounds, just being everywhere, using his length because he has the longest arms I've ever seen. And so I think he's going to be a factor this year. I mean, I think he's – a lot of kids, their biggest step you take in college is freshman and sophomore year. And same with Taj DeGorville, he's taking a big step as well. You saw it with B.J. Davis last year. That freshman sophomore jump. So I think those guys both really took it. And now it's just, you know, Dutch has so many pieces at his disposal. It's just now how he's going to fit them all together and keep them happy and keep kind of a rhythm on the floor with playing time.
And now I understand they have a brand new player from Long Beach, California, 6'5 senior, Reese Dixon Waters now. Anybody see this?
Yes.
He's changing his name, or at least his last name. He's adding Dixon to Reese Waters, right?
So that's what he played with, I believe, in high school in the first few years at USC. He went just to Waters, and now he's coming back as Dixon Waters. He's looked really good, and the question is, can he stay healthy? And you know, he really has been pretty healthy most of his career, except last year when you know he broke his foot and he just couldn't get it healed. If he can stay healthy and keep mentally focused, I think he's their best player. But, you know, those are two big ifs, and it's hard when you've sat out a year like he did. And it wasn't like he was a redshirt where he was still working out. He wasn't doing anything for a while. He's in great shape. He's looked good in the workouts. But we'll have to see as the season goes and get his rhythm of games. But, man, is he talented. And he, you know, they have three guys in their team that could be Mountain West preseason player of the year, in Miles Bird, Magoon Gwaith, and Reese. And, you know, I don't know how you pick between the three of them. I think what will happen is the votes will get split and it'll be Utah State's Mason Faltzlev. But these guys are all three candidates.
They're all going to be good.
Reese is the guy everyone's sleeping on, so put it that way.
Reese Dixon Waters. I don't know why this made – I know I got to say goodbye. We're at the top. But I want to tell Mark one thing because I remember he wrote this. He covered the NBA back in the day with the Lakers. And he was also covered the whole NBA. And one year – Hakeem Olajuwon, the great Hall of Fame center for the Rockets, changed the spelling of his name from Akeem, and he added the H, Hakeem.
Yes.
Mark Ziegler wrote a story about this brand new kid in the NBA, Hakeem, to look out for as a possible MVP. I remember you did that. You took advantage of his name change to say, like, this is a new guy, even though it's the same guy. Mark's a great
same
writer.
Guy.
Don't look at me like that, Scraby. He's giving me a look.
That was a fantastic story.
I'm going to go over and pop you one.
What? Whoa.
I'm trying
to
say something nice about Mark Ziegler.
I didn't say anything. You were looking at me.
Reese Dixon Waters, look out
okay.
for him.
Before we go, I got to ask you guys two questions. Have nothing to do with SDFC, have nothing to do with San Diego State basketball.
Right.
Number of wins by San Diego State football team this year, and how far do the Padres go in the playoffs?
Ooh. I'm going to say six, and we're going to have a parade.
Think they're going to win? I was going to say, Chris and I kind of talked about this. I was going to say six wins, too. I think at least NLCS. At least.
If we get that far, we might as well take it all the way.
I agree with you, but I can't say that they're going to have a parade.
I can't say it either, but somebody's got to predict it in case it happens.
But you notice he said parade, and if you look in Nevada right now, so that you know the Summerlin Little League team lost in the Little League World Series, got killed 7-0, but they're having a parade anyway. So maybe San Diego, if they get to the World Series, will have a parade.
Lost parade.
I don't think Mike Schilt would allow for that. Z-Man, we love it. Thank
Z-Man.
You. Good luck working on the golf swing. Don't work too hard because you're already too good of a golfer for my liking. But we'll see you next time. Thanks, buddy.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Yep. Talk to you. Mark Ziegler from the UT. All right. Yeah, Reese Dixon Waters, changing the last name from Waters to Dixon Waters, just so we're all up to snuff on that. Hour number two is next.